We're going to call the Senate State Affairs to order. The time is 3:30, and with us today, Senator Geisel, Senator Wilson, Senator Coghill, and Senator Egan, and staff Christine Marsegan is here, as well as Chris Dickrell, who's doing the recording, and Ben behind me is going to do the LIO. So on today's agenda, we have three bills. Today's definitely a day of conflict. SCR 1, which is changes uniform rules abstaining from voting, Senator Gardner's bill. House Bill 87, then, will be the conflict interest Board of Fish and Game, and it's Representative Stutes. And then the last bill today will be House Bill 44, Representative Gran, which has to do with legislative ethics, voting, and conflicts. Okay, so with that, is there anything for to come before the committee before we get started? Okay. If not, then Senator Gardner, if you want to come up and bring your trusty staff with you, and welcome to Senate State Affairs. I know you just came from a committee on innovation and the economy. This is a little bit different committee. It's a committee of conflicts, I guess. So, Senator Gardner, the floor is yours. If you would introduce the bill to us, please.
Thank you, and thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for hearing SCR 1. I'm Berta Gardner, representing Midtown Anchorage, for the record, and I am joined by my aide, Nathaniel Grabman. And SCR 1 is a bill that the committee heard previously. This is bringing it up again, if I'm not mistaken. No?
That was the first time.
No, we've heard it before.
Yes, last year.
Oh, I'm sorry. brief at ease. Sorry. Okay, Senate State Affairs is back to order. Yes, this bill apparently has been heard once before. First time for me as the new chairman of State Affairs. So go ahead, if you would then, I guess, briefly introduce the bill to myself and maybe refresh the memories of the committee. It sounds like it wasn't heard since March 7th of last year, almost
yes.
A year ago.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With your permission, I'd like to have my aide reintroduce the bill, and this is his first time, so I hope you'll be kind to him. Thank you.
You'll state your name and affiliation on the record, please.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Nathaniel Grabman, staff Senator Berta Gardner. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present on SCR1. This resolution is about transparency. As you know, when a legislator declares a conflict of interest, Uniform Rule 34B requires unanimous consent in order for the requester to be excused from voting. A single objection is sufficient to overrule the conflict of interest statement. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, Alaska is the only state which requires unanimous consent in order to abstain from voting in those instances. Under Uniform Rule 34B, a legislator may not abstain from voting unless they declare a conflict of interest and the entire body agrees. While this may theoretically occur, legislative research couldn't find a single instance of unanimous consent being given with respect to a potential conflict of interest recusal. This resolution does not change the current process. Rather, it increases transparency by recording recording information often otherwise hidden from the public. While this information may be recorded on occasion, this is not always the case. This resolution aims to standardize the process by ensuring that this information be recorded. If adopted, SCR1 would require the following three things be recorded in the journal: the legislator declaring a conflict, the nature of that conflict, and the name of any legislators who would object to the conflict. By increasing transparency, this proposal aims to accomplish two ends. First, to better inform the public, and second, to protect legislators by avoiding the appearance of impropriety when there is none. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the resolution, and I thank the committee for their time.
All right. Thank you very much for that introduction of the bill. Questions from the committee? Senator Geisel.
Th-
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Senator Gardner, you know, when we introduce legislation, we are answering the question why. Why did we do this? What brought this forward? So that's my question to you. Why?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've heard at various times in my terms in the legislature people saying that people vote when they have a conflict of interest or they don't declare a conflict of interest. We've seen various responses to that, and I want to say for the record that I am not aware of anybody ever voting when they had a conflict of interest, and I'm certainly not accusing anybody, but people worry about being perceived as failing to disclose, and so we have some people saying things like, I want to declare a perceived conflict of interest, where the person maybe even has talked to Ledge Ethics, and I know this has happened, and they say, no, that's not a conflict, but they don't want anybody to come and say, you didn't ever declare a conflict of interest. So this puts on the record that the person did declare a conflict of interest, and if somebody says, I don't think you have a conflict of interest, you should vote, I'm willing to, if I am the person, I'm willing to be on the record for saying that. And it just, it protects the person who is accused of not disclosing and also keeps a record of who says, well, you should vote.
Follow.
Senator Giesel.
So you're implying, though, that folks with a conflict are still voting. I'm just not quite sure that what we're fixing here, whether the person stands up or not, in our laws in this state, which is a very small population and a very large piece of geography, all votes count. And the statement was made in the introduction that information was being concealed. So I guess I'm still not quite sure what the problem is.
Through the chair, this is Berta Gardner. I have no intention of implying that that people are voting when they shouldn't vote. That is not it. But I'm saying that all of us should understand that there may very well be a time when somebody should not vote on an issue. And we can conceive of how that could easily happen. Every other state has a different way, has a variety of ways of dealing with that, and we do not. We've explored ways, and I guess you'll hear two other bills here today that address it. And I don't think there's a perfect way. And for myself, if I ever believed I had a conflict of interest, nobody could make me vote. Because I would think if I felt it was unethical for me to vote, I would not vote. I could sit there and I would try not to be confrontational or defiant, but I would not vote if I had a conflict of interest. And I suspect many people would feel that way. As I said, I am not aware personally of anybody who's voted with a conflict of interest. I'm not aware of a single case of that myself. But there's a perception out there that people vote anyway, that people do have conflicts of interest, and I think there should be a way for people to gracefully put on the record when they shouldn't vote. And when somebody does have a conflict of interest, should be able to not vote. That, I think, is important for the state. And what I want, I mean, what this proposal does is simply put on the record that I believe I have a conflict of interest, here's my conflict, and I'm on the record. And if the next person says, it's not a conflict, you have to vote, let that person be on the record, too. Because I don't know a perfect way. I thought we could have the Senate president, the minority leader, and the majority leader, and if all three of them agree that it's a conflict, that's one thing I considered. If all three of them agreed it's a conflict, then the person wouldn't have to vote. However, again, it comes down to if I believed I had a conflict, I want to not be able to vote. And I don't care if I have to, if I can persuade three people or two other people to agree with me, I don't want to have to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. So, Senator Gardner, would you envision, so I think your intent of this bill is to get somebody on record who objected, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So would you envision then, say in our body, the Senate, that the majority leader, if it was a majority member who said, I think I have a, I perceive I have a conflict of interest, would it be the majority leader then that would object? And if it's a minority member, the minority member would object? Or, because I think you're trying to focus this to one person versus having five or six blurt out, I object. Am I right, or is that, am I reading too much into this?
Through the chair, that's not my intention to say who should object. I'm saying if another member doesn't agree that there's a conflict of interest, then that person, whoever it is, could say so and be part of the record. I mean, I suppose caucuses could independently determine that the majority leader or the caucus leader will do that. But what I want is for somebody who does have a conflict of interest, and you and I know that it happens all the time that people stay up and say, well, I may have a conflict of interest. This is about the Girl Scouts, and I was a Girl Scout, and my granddaughters are Girl Scouts, and so, you know, I have a conflict of interest, and something like that. It's not really a conflict of interest. It's not. But we see those things happening because people would rather, it's like, do I have to disclose this to APOC? Well, better to disclose it unnecessarily than to fail to disclose when you should. And that's what we operate under. But it means there are lots of disclosures that really aren't necessary because they're not conflicts.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Garnett. Senator
Kalka. Mr. Chairman, after watching this for a number of years, it is true that many times people will get up and make a declaration but will not ask to be excused from voting. And it's the rare time that somebody is actually asking to be excused. At that point, if they don't have a good reason for asking for a vote, then there is an objection. And I think I agree with the senator. I don't know that I've ever heard a reason that reached the level they know there was going to be, for example, a pay raise specifically to them if they did that bill, or this was going to their contract. Or we've never heard enough where the general law of applicability didn't apply. And so we've bumped up against it a couple times, mostly in the oil and gas world. But usually it's more of a way to say to the public generally, you know, I'm involved in this industry, and we've said the same thing about people who are teachers who vote on NEA issues. We've said the same thing about union contracts where union members were voting, but it was general law of applicability, so they were declaring a conflict, but there was no self-serving part of it other than they were serving an industry that they truly, for real, believed in. And so to excuse a member from voting from their district, you're taking, in our case, 30,000 people out of the debate. And so that's a pretty high hurdle. And so I think unless there's a real self-aggrandizement a self-benefit that is just so unusual, then I agree with that. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody make that case strong enough. Several people have declared, and several people have asked to be excused, but it's never risen to the level where a vote actually had to be taken that I know of. So then putting the person who objects on the record might make it a political tool rather than a beneficial tool, and that was my only concern when we first heard this bill last year, and I brought it up to the senator. I don't mind having somebody on record saying, look, I honestly think I might have a conflict here. That should be on the record. I think that's probably appropriate. But to have those who object to it, I think in just thinking through this, the best I know how, it looks like that could become more of a political lightning rod than the actual declaration. So I'm still pondering it, but that's my gut feeling anyway, just for what it's worth.
Senator Gerst?
Thank you. Through the chair, I agree with everything you've said. I did once see somebody stand up, declare a conflict of interest, and then walk out of the room, and nobody called them back.
That's true.
And that was a way that person, that person believed that there was a conflict and was determined to not vote, and it didn't come to ahead because not a single person said, I object. And it was a graceful way to do it. And I was glad to see that. I don't know if there was really a conflict or not. I don't even remember what the issue was. And you're also right that if somebody is elected to a district, maybe because the district knows they have expertise in an area that's important to that district, and then suddenly they're deemed unable to vote for anything related to the issue that the district wants more than anything, is not the way to go. And that's why we it's a thorny problem. And people have looked at it in a host of different ways, but the fact remains that sooner or later somebody will have a genuine conflict and should not vote on a particular issue potentially, and there should be a way that it can happen. And, you know, I imagine that what really would happen if this were passed is that caucuses would agree that the caucus leader would object if they wanted the person, felt the person could and should vote. But if you felt like they shouldn't vote, then don't object.
Okay. No, that's a good point, Senator Gardner. And I guess I can foresee an instance where maybe a road is, we're voting on a road that somebody owns a bunch of property on, and all of a sudden now they're going to, you know, the property is going to be worth 10 times as much. That perhaps would be a conflict of interest, of course, not knowing what that situation is. But whenever somebody who works for a union votes on an issue that affects that union, or somebody works for an industry that impacts that industry, they as individuals aren't benefiting any more than anyone else in that union or that industry. So that's where it gets a little thorny, like you said. So it seems like you've come up with the answer that if someone truly feels like they have a conflict, that they could just, you know, walk off the floor.
Through the chair, that's true, but they have to trust that one of their colleagues doesn't disagree and say, I object. And then they still could leave, but there could be, someone could put a call on the chair, you know, and then they can come back, and then how do you force them to push a button? I don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody wants it to come to that. And I do think that the public wants to know that if a person has a conflict, they have a way to not vote.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, Senator Gardner. And like you said, though, 18 years I've been here, and you've been here probably almost as long, I don't know that that issue's ever come up where somebody truly has a conflict of interest and shouldn't vote. No. Like you said, we've had people walk off the floor for whatever reason. Senator Gardner, or Coggett.
Gardner. first of all, it's been an issue that we've talked about for a long, long time. And I'm glad you brought it up because we have gotten sloppy down through the years. That's the protocol issue on the floor. Our rules actually say they should stand up and give the reason and ask to be given the permission to abstain from a vote. And that happens so rarely that we've just gotten sloppy with our own rules. And we've allowed it because, generally speaking, it's a perceived conflict and not a real conflict. That's been kind of the general practice. And so this will probably make us kind of have to stand up and take notice. I still struggle with the person objecting only because it's just only one person can object, and there might be more than one person who, for real, had an objection. Then you get one person on the record who can be a target. Instead of it being the issue that you're asking to be recused about and the actual reason to have it on the record, you might have that record for other reasons. And been around this process long enough to know that there are the real issues and then there are the political issues, and I just see that as a potential, that's all.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Senator Wilson?
No, I just agree with the later comment from us, Senator Coghill, that, you know, having the objection be stated in the journal, the reason in the journal, I'm okay with, but it is the members that, or member who normally objects, because normally you have a floor leader or the majority leader, a minority leader, that would normally always object, and So that name would be in that record constantly. So I just fear for that same similar reasons for Senator Coghill.
So you're saying nobody would want to be the majority leader or the minority leader. Yeah. So, Senator Gardner, somebody did stand up and says, I have a conflict of interest, and somebody objects, then and they state their reasons, then what do you recommend after that? The body vote, Senator Gardner?
Through the chair, it was something that we did consider, and the problem is, it comes down to, for me, I don't care if it's 19 or 21 people that think I should vote. If I don't think I should vote, I won't vote. Other people might feel differently about, you know, how to make that. So we're just trying to say, and people say, well, people vote all the time with a conflict of interest. I go, well, people declare a conflict of interest that isn't, may or may not be a real conflict of interest. But there should be a way out. There just should be a way out, and I don't know what the answer is. Let's see if somebody else has a great answer.
Well, I appreciate that, Senator Gardner, but I guess I'm puzzled with your resolution. It doesn't give somebody a way out. It just states this is going to be our process.
Thank you. Through the chair, what it does do is put on the record that somebody who might be accused of having a conflict of interest in voting can say, I declared a conflict of interest. I described what it was. And under the uniform rules, because so-and-so objected, I had to vote. I was required to vote under our rules. So it doesn't change that. You're correct. But it does give the person a defense. And consequently, the person who objected can defend it and say, you know, defend their own objection and say, you know, he didn't own property on that road. It wasn't a conflict of interest.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think I'm coming around to green with Senator Giesel. I'm not sure this is necessary, because that's how we do things now. We stand up and declare a conflict of interest. Some or others object, then you have to vote. And Senator Gardner, I guess what you're trying to do is pinpoint this to one person who objects?
Through the chair, no, that's not my intent. My intent is to say, yes, it's true. But we're not changing the statute because I don't know what change is really perfect. But what I'm saying is that when people say they voted with a conflict, I can say they tried not to vote. You know, they asked to be excused. Now, in reality, if this passed and there's a record, I think that people won't be doing the perceived conflict of interest. They may stand up, as Senator Coghill said, and describe their position but not ask not to vote and sit down. But each individual has to draw their own line, knowing their own lives and their own investments, their own whatever, and decide for themselves how they want to proceed. Well, that's what we do all the time.
Senator Gardner. Senator Coghill?
Senator, I think probably the real value of this would be to force us to put it in a motion, because it's going to be recorded. That would probably bring the rules of the House back to ground. So that would probably encourage better behavior. So that part I'm probably more open to, is that in recording something in the journal as a motion, probably the motion should be made properly. So I think that's probably a way to address some protocol that has been slipping. So just to let you know. Anyway.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Senator Giesel.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I understand what Senator Coghill just said. I don't know that we've been sloppy in protocol, but, of course, I'm rather new here. A standing up and wishing to be excused from voting is not recorded in the minutes of the floor session. Is that true?
Because I know that's true.
Thank you.
Thank you for that question, Senator Giesel. Okay, well, we have a lot of unknowns here and some different differences of opinion, and it's a very tough subject, as you know, for all of us. I agree with you. I think if somebody really feels awkward about voting and doesn't want to vote, they should have that option. But I also think that people are elected knowing, with the general public knowing their backgrounds. As you know, we disclose everything. And I think in some cases people like that that experience and knowledge. And so, okay. Well, thank you very much, Senator Gardner, and your trusty staff for joining us today.
Thank you.
So with that, let's move on to another conflict bill here. This is House Bill 87. And this is Representative Stutes and Matt Gruings. Our Representative Stutes' bill, and then Matt's going to help, I guess. Or we all need a lifeline, right?
Right.
So welcome to Senate State Affairs. Okay. Welcome to State Affairs, Representative Stutes.
Chair.
And the floor is yours. If you could tell us what your bill does and why it's important.
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for allowing me to present today to you today. For the record, I'm Representative Louise Stutes, and I represent House District 32. I'm here with a conflict of interest bill, a little unlike the senators. This pertains, it's House Bill 87, and it pertains strictly to the Board of Fish and the Board of Game. And the reason for this bill is currently when you are sitting on particularly the Board of Fish, the Board of Game doesn't seem to be quite as stringent, although they live under the same statute as the Board of Fish does. And when you are sitting on the Board of Fish, if you have a conflict, you certainly are conflicted out from voting on it, but you're conflicted out from the discussion as well. And in having experts on this board, it seems a little odd to exclude them from the conversation when that's what they're there for. So consequently, this bill's intent is to allow the individuals to participate, if they have a conflict, let me back up, if they have a conflict, to allow them to participate in the discussion, even though they may not have the opportunity to vote on the bill. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Matt Gruening, my trusty committee aide, and he will kind of walk you through the bill.
All right. Thank you, Representative Stutes. Mr. Gruening.
Thank you, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Matt Gruening, staff to Representative Stutes. As the representative had indicated, the intent of House Bill 87 is to change the manner in which the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game function to allow members to deliberate on subjects of which they have declared personal or financial interest, according to the Executive Branch Ethics Act. The Ethics Act forbids a public officer from taking or withholding official action in order to affect a matter in which the member has a personal or financial interest. Official action is then defined to mean advice, participation, assistance, including, for example, a recommendation, decision, approval, disapproval, vote, or similar action. Currently, the board members are required to divulge a conflict of interest if they or their families, immediate families, are involved in a subject being deliberated on. The conflicted member could then no longer offer their input in the process and cannot vote in the matter at hand. In fact, they're asked to step down and join the audience. And this bill allows conflicted members to offer remarks and input, but the members still cannot vote on the issue. The member is also precluded from voting on whether they have a conflict of interest or not. That is determined by the ethics officer, who's the chairman, and then if there's an objection, it goes to a vote of the committee, or the board, rather. The qualifications for the appointment to the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game are quite different and more general from most boards. Instead of being chosen because they are professionals in their fields, members are selected on the basis of interest in the public affairs, good judgment, knowledge, and the ability of field of action of the board, and with a view to providing a diversity of interest and points of view in membership. And one of the things we're looking at is that somebody might have a different point of view because of their knowledge, because it's essentially a layman's board and you might only have a couple people that that own a certain particular type of permit or work in a lodge. They might have some perspective on the nuances of fishing that other members of the board might not have, and thus their knowledge and their expertise is actually of great use. In addition, many of the other boards are tied to licenses. They are exempt, many of the other boards, from certain requirements in the Ethics Act. So this is a board that deals with licenses as well, and it's one of the boards that is that you're not allowed to deliberate, and in some of them, some cases, the boards are actually allowed to vote. And so this isn't it makes a lot of sense from our perspective, from the fact that you have very few amounts of expert viewpoints on what's being discussed. Often in fishing, a financial interest is tied to knowledge of the field. Fishing issues tend to be very complicated and knowledge-based. A person who may have an uncle, aunt, brother who has a certain type of fishing permit or has a fishing permit themselves might be the only person on the board who understands exactly what's being discussed in detail. Particularly in rural Alaska, where entire families might be permit holders or lodge owners, the current conflict policy is discouraging, in some instances, qualified members from applying to the board on the basis of them knowing they would be conflicted out of the discussion in a lot of cases. Another issue is one of public process and public trust. Board members who are conflicted out are still actually offering their input, but they're doing it outside the meeting, and they're doing it discussing on the side with other board members. In order to maintain the public's trust, we really view that we believe these discussions should be happening in the meeting and on the public record. So there's that aspect to it as well, as it really improves the public process. It seems prudent to allow members with expertise and knowledge to offer their input but not vote. It is the sponsor's opinion that this change would help the boards make more informed decisions and enhance the public process and lead to general stronger resource management statewide. I will say that, in full disclosure, I would like to point out that due to recent staff turnover, and we discovered last week that there may be some unintended consequences with the bill the way it is currently drafted. Unfortunately, due to the personal bill deadline, we're unable to fix the draft fixes in time. But also, aside from that, we thought it was the prudent action to present our intent to the committee, point out the issues that might need to be addressed, and let the will of the chair and the committee decide what changes, if any, need to be made to the bill. And with the chair's permission, I would direct members to the legal memo and members' packets dated February 9th. So essentially, with your permission, Mr. Chair,
please.
Essentially what this memo indicates, and I will say first before I get into it, this memo was debated at length in House Resources, and it was debated to the committee's satisfaction that there wasn't an issue. We have since we kind of took a look at the memo again last week, we had some discussions with legislative legal, and we spoke to the drafter, we spoke to the Board of Fish and not the Board of Game. I couldn't get a hold of Christy Tibbles, but the Board of Fish Executive Director and the representative and myself had kind of come to the conclusion that there might need to be some clarification in the language regarding our intent. So what the memo says essentially is the use of the words notwithstanding any other provision of this chapter in the beginning of the bill could have the effect, and it's not clear whether it does or doesn't, but it seems like an easy fix, of superseding AS 52120C, which in turn would supersede 3952220, and you can see in your legal memo it's the middle paragraph. And that essentially is the nuts and bolts and the meat of the process by which you declare a conflict, how a conflict is determined, who the ethics officer is, and how the voting could be determined, and whether you can still vote or deliberate or not. And that certainly was not our intent. Our intent was simply to allow the use of the current process when declaring and determining a conflict of interest, and the only thing that the sponsor would like to change, and is essentially what was voted on throughout the process too, is that if there is a conflict, that the conflicted member can deliberate but not vote. We were not looking in any way to inadvertently affect the current process by which a conflict is determined. That seems to be working well, and it's well established in statute. The memo, like I said, was debated, and we took another look at it and decided that it was we really wanted to bring it to the committee's attention so that you could make your own determination. You can see these concerns are echoed, and with the chair's permission again, I'd like to direct the committee's attention to a document written by Glenn Haight, the executive director of the Board of Fisheries, titled Background Information on the Alaska Boards of Game and Fisheries Ethics Acts Process. And those concerns can be found on page 4 and 5. And in a less legal speakeasy, he says pretty much the same thing that the legal memo says, that it needs some clarification to really get to the intent of what we were getting at. Just of note briefly, too, for the committee's information, this is probably the best document in the packet. He really outlines what the process is. He's got a great section on page 3 that talks about the recusals that have happened over the years for the Board of Fish and the Board of Game. And I would definitely recommend that the committee give this a good look. There is one other area that we'd like to bring to the members' attention to, and it has to do with the same issue, but it also led in turn to another issue. Currently, the legislation also narrows, for the purposes of this act, what the definition of immediate family member is. That was originally intended to be for the purposes of debate, but because it might have an unintended superseding effect on the statute, it could be interpreted that that also implies the voting. So that's one area we wanted to bring to your attention. That would just be an unintended consequence of the fact that the 52-220 was not meant to be superseded. Again, the sponsor will look to the will of the chair and the committee for if that change is appropriate. And to recap, our only intent with this bill, and still is to allow members who have a conflict under the current system of determining a conflict to deliberate on the matter before the board but still be unable to vote. And I deeply apologize for the confusion of having to present you errors that had happened in the process before us. That's never anybody's ideal way to present a bill, but we just felt that being up front and giving you all the information was the way to go on that one. I would like to say that I did, if the committee was amenable and the chair was amenable to making these changes, I spoke to Ledge Legal, and it's a pretty simple fix that they believe they could make relatively quickly. So anyway, with that, I thank you for your time and appreciate the committee's attention.
And I will just add one thing. We feel it's imperative that it's clear-cut and easily understood and that it follows the same routine throughout. And so, as Matt mentioned, the only intent of this legislation is to allow board members to participate in the discussion. It does not change the fact that if they've been conflicted out, they cannot vote. They just can impart their knowledge, because it seems, as I said earlier, seems a little bit odd to have somebody with that kind of expertise and not be able to share it. So I thank you as well for your time.
Thank you, Representative Stutes. I guess I have to ask the question, why do you not want them to vote? I mean, if they have that expertise, they were probably picked by the governor to be on that committee because of that expertise.
Through the chair, this is Representative Stutes. I think the issue is there, when you're dealing in fisheries particularly, there's the perceived idea that you personally can be affected monetarily. That I think that is the bottom line, and that is what they're trying to avoid in this situation. So by being able to put forth your expertise but yet let the others vote is the way it is now, and it seems to be working well.
Okay, very good. And then if I could just ask one more question, then we'll go on to other committee members. What is the financial hurdle for a conflict of interest as it pertains to this board? Is it any financial interest, or is it a $5,000 or $10,000?
Through the chair, it's $5,000.
Okay.
And that I have that statute here if you'd like a... It is actually Section 3952110. Looks like D, little D, and that was actually, I believe, former Senator Hollis French actually was the one that made that motion through a bill, and I don't recall which one. But yet, is 5,000 the stock or ownership in business is presumed to be insignificant if the value of stock or ownership and interest, including an option to purchase an ownership or interest, is less than $5,000. So that is the bar for significant.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Questions, Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I'm reading the memo from, okay, let me get back to the front page, Glenn Height, am I understanding that the procedure that's followed now complies with the Executive Branch Ethics Act?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Go ahead. So that means that Ethics Act states that a person who is conflicted out cannot participate in the debate or vote. Is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, yes, that is correct.
So, Mr. Chairman, then what you're proposing is to tweak that Executive Ethics Act for the Board of Fish and the Board of Game only?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, yes, that is correct. Due to the mostly the nature of fishing and the way that the boards, the qualifications for the boards, is very general, and we view that, like we said before, you might be one of the only people who has really any intricate knowledge on the nuances of that particular fishery, and thus at least your input is very important in making the decision.
Go ahead, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's what I understood, too, and I wanted you just to clarify that for the record. As someone that has served on a professional regulatory board, which also falls under the Executive Ethics Act, there wasn't that degree of specialization, so to speak, on that particular board or that I could identify on other professional regulatory boards in any case. So I see the uniqueness of the Board of Fish and the Board of Game. So it seems like a logical change. Thank you.
Senator Giesel, if I might, through the chair, this is Representative Stute speaking. That situation presented itself in Kodiak about 3 years ago, I believe. Was it 3 years ago? Anyway, about 3 or 4 years ago, and we had an individual from Kodiak that her ex-husband had a small ownership in a particular fishery that was up for discussion on the Board of Fish. She was conflicted out. Consequently, she could not enter the discussion or vote. There was a tie, and it failed, and it was a pretty important vote that could have, you know, and her input would have made a difference.
Might I add something to that, Mr. Chair? On a different note, too, Executive Director Glenn Haight could speak to this in more detail, but I know that in a recent Board of Fish meeting, the chairman, John Jensen, was conflicted out of 50 different proposals. He's from Petersburg, and he's got a great amount of knowledge in family members that fish, but he wasn't allowed to even deliberate.
Anything else, Senator Deese?
Only a comment, Mr. Chairman. You know, when we, on the Resources Committee, interview the applicants for these boards, we do look for that expertise, and in fact, that's why we vote for them. We want that expertise present on the board. So I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. Thank you.
Yeah, the only follow-up question I have to that is, what if somebody doesn't declare a conflict? I mean, you're saying there's a $5,000 threshold, and so, I don't know, maybe somebody thinks that their equipment or whatever they own or have isn't worth that much. How do you define that, or how do you enforce that, I guess?
Through the chair, or to the chair, Senator Meyer, I might throw a lifeline on this one and get Executive Director Haight to come up. I do have some information in the statutes about that, but there is a process, and I believe Mr. Haight might be a little better to speak to it.
Thank you. Mr. Haight, if you can put yourself on the record for us, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Glenn Haight, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Alaska Board of Fisheries. If the question was, what happens if someone doesn't declare a conflict, I might have to throw another lifeline. We have also online is Seth Bosang, who is with the Department of Law. He's the lead attorney with the Board of Fisheries, and he really helps implement this Ethics Act. I would speculate and turn over to Seth if I'm wrong, that if the board passed something where the conflict was not declared, that could be voidable. I mean, I would assume that there someone could bring question to that, and it would cause the board to reconsider that that action.
Okay, very good. Well, it looks like we do have Seth on the online here. Is it Mr. Boising? Seth Boising?
Unfortunately, Mr. Boising had to step out. This is Assistant Attorney General Brad Mine, who also works on Board of Fish Matters, and okay. I'm sitting in for Seth at the moment.
Okay. Did you hear the question or the comment? And
yes, through the chair. Yes, I did. And to the extent that a matter would take place where there was a situation where someone had, you know, it had failed to properly declare a conflict, I would need to check it out further, but I would agree my initial response is that it would be a voidable action. However, I would like to add that the board members take these matters very seriously, and they explore their potential conflicts, and they do so with further discussions, including discussions with the Department of Law, to run through the items and through the specific items that are in the Ethics Act to avoid those types of problems from even occurring.
Okay, very good. Any other questions for the Department of Law while we're here? Go ahead, Senator Giesel.
Thank you. So, Mr. Boising, is this... I'm just thinking about this exception that we're making to the Executive Ethics Act. Is that a legal problem? Are we getting into some muddy area here?
To the chair, this is Assistant Attorney General Brad Mayan sitting in for Mr. Boising. And the questions I have not specifically on myself. I'm relying upon the look into this statute from others here within law and legislative affairs. And I would direct the committee to Mr. Haidt's April 12th memorandum of 2017 on page 5. I think our concerns are in. Encapsulated there. There's three items there, and they're really not. They're really for clarification. We would like to see these things clarified so that then they would be consistent with the Ethics Act. Mr. Chair, through the chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Additional questions, Senator?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I might have an answer to that question that was initially asked.
Go ahead.
Section 3952.310 complaints. It outlines the process by which the Attorney General may initiate a complaint or a person may file a complaint. That's on subsection A, B, and B. And again, that's 3952.310. And it outlines the process by which he shall review each complaint filed. He may refer the complaint to the subject designated supervisor. It goes on in section F to talk about how he accepts the complaint for investigation. In subsection G, it discusses... if the complaint is successful, eventually it goes down to another section that talks about dismissal of formal proceedings if they basically find that the complaint is unwarranted, and goes to the next section, 3952.330, the corrective or preventative action. It eventually leads to a hearing process. And I would say, just perusing this really quick, it looks like they would hold a hearing about the dismissal or about the complaint, and I would have to read through this a little more detailed to get you a more detailed answer, but there is a laid out process by which a person or the Attorney General may initiate a complaint and decide whether a public hearing on the violation is necessary.
I could do a follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chair, through the Chair, Senator Giesel, in terms of the question of whether this would sort of make it more difficult but it's pretty clear just the intent of the bill, and I don't think calling the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game to this standard would be easy for us, simple to implement. We would understand it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Senator Giesel. Any other questions for our experts here? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate you introducing us to this bill. We do have some folks online to testify, and we have some folks here in Juneau, I believe. So let's see. Let's go. Jerry, did you want to testify, Jerry McCune?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Jerry McCune. I represent Cordova District Fishermen United. You heard quite a bit about the bill. I probably spent 40 years going to Board of Fish meetings more than I'd like to, that's for sure. When this came about, this ethics, before that, there wasn't a problem, but there was other problems. But anyway, it's pretty frustrating when you're sitting in the audience and there may be a question come up during deliberations about crab fishing. So this particular fellow, or could be a woman at the time, is the expert in that fishery, and they have to sit in the audience because they can't come up, the public can't come up, nobody can come up and answer the question unless Fish and Game staff can. And lots of times they're not so clear on how gear works because they're not actual fishermen. So it gets really frustrating for the public that they may ask about the rings in a crab pot, nobody knows, and the person that's conflicted out cannot get up there and tell them it's got to be in there and it's got to be two of them and then 6 inches, you know, so and so and so on. So it gets pretty frustrating that way. I think it's only fair to say that the Board of Fish is from all over the state. I remember when Howard Dilo was on the board, and I'm sure that Senator Coghill knows Howard, and he was conflicted out on a proposal because his aunt has a permit, set net permit. He doesn't have one. She doesn't fish it, but she owns one, so he was conflicted out. So he couldn't talk at all. He had to go sit in the audience and joke around with us for a while before he could come back to the board. That's the frustrating part about this, is you have a bunch of experts, as Senator Geisel pointed out. It may be about sport fishing, but I don't know a lot about lures or stuff, but if you're conflicted out, you can't talk about it. So everybody has their little expert place, from Fairbanks to maybe Bethel, and you may want to hear what they have to say, and they're not being allowed to vote because of a conflict, maybe a personal conflict, you own a permit or something like that. But I don't see how a person like Howard Delo's aunt owns a permit is a financial gain. I don't understand how he would gain anything personally or a financial gain out of that. I don't see how that could happen. I mean, you have 540 permit holders on the Copper River. If I was boating and I didn't have a permit and I was conflicted out because my son's fishing, I don't see how I could benefit all 540 of them, let alone my individual son. If I was on the Board of Fish or up for the Board of Fish, I would have to consider whether I'd be an effective member or not. Because I have cousins, I have my daughter, my sons, they're all fishing in these fisheries in Prince William Sound. So being on the board, I would pretty much be sitting in the audience on most of the discussion about seining or gill netting. So I wouldn't be a very effective board member to be able to talk about my own area, or let alone educate the board members that are on there. As the board members go through the process, it takes you almost 9 years to get through the whole state to every area to really get the knowledge. So you're really dependent on your first 3 years as a board member on other board members that's been there before to listen to what they had to say. And if you're conflicted out, they're not privy to that. So if we could just get it so the board members could be able to talk, that would be really a good thing, particularly with this board, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Jerry? I guess the question I have, you mentioned maybe somebody has expertise that's on the board and you can't get that expertise because they're sitting out in the audience. I've not had the privilege, I guess, of ever attending a Board of Fish meeting. But if there was a question about certain equipment or gear type, are there experts that you can call upon at these Board of Fish meetings?
Normally, Mr. Chair, Jerry McCune again, the only thing during deliberations usually is just the Fish and Game staff that they talk to. They don't call it, the public testimony is closed, so they can't call somebody up there. I guess they could probably call a recess and maybe try to ask somebody. But usually during deliberations, they don't usually take a break. They've got the proposal on the table, they're talking about it, and they don't usually do that.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Okay. Seeing no questions, thank you, Mr. McCune. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. It looks like we also have a Francis Leach here in the in Juneau. So, Francis, if you also could put your name and affiliation on the record, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman Meyer and committee members. For the record, my name is Francis Leach, and I'm here today on behalf of United Fishermen of Alaska, where I served as the executive director. UFA represents 35 commercial fishing organizations participating in fisheries throughout the state and in off the coast of Alaska. United Fishermen would like to go on the record in support of HB 87. The Alaska Board of Fisheries process that our state has in place is unparalleled and is a shining model for the public process and how fisheries are managed throughout the state. UFA appreciates greatly the time and dedication the board members and staff at ADF&G and members of the public put into preparing for these meetings, bringing forth their expertise and hands-on experience. But what good is it to bring one's expertise to the table if they're not allowed to use it? I had the pleasure of working for ADF&G for 5 years, serving the Board of Fisheries between 2012 and 2017. In those 5 years, I attended 35 in-person board meetings and had 11 board conferences, teleconferences. Needless to say, I know a lot about the board process, one of which is conflict of interest and how that plays out in the board process. At the beginning of every meeting, each board member has to give their ethics disclosure and list any proposals they may have a conflict, at which point the Department of Law and other board members weigh in and state whether or not the board member should be allowed to participate in these proposals. I've never met a board member who didn't take this process seriously and who hadn't already brought up these concerns prior to the meeting with the Department of Law and the Board of Fish Executive Director, Mr. Haight. They are open, honest, and extremely transparent in this process when it comes to providing their conflicts. Whereas UFA believes board members should not be allowed to vote on proposals they are conflicted out of, we believe they should be able to deliberate and discuss these proposals on the record to help clarify and provide an insight into the fishery. I have seen too many times a board struggle to find the answer they need in order to make an informed decision, whilst the recused board member squirmed in his or her seat with the answer. Sometimes this answer is mundane as what it means to have a purse seine closed and no longer fishing. The most memorable board meeting that I ever have been to was the 2015 Southeast Finfish meeting in Sitka, Alaska. The board chair had just resigned, leaving the board of seven down to six. On several proposals, two board members were conflicted out, leaving a board of four members, one from Bristol Bay, one from Kodiak, one from the interior, and one from the Mat-Su, to figure out the complex fisheries of Southeast Alaska, without the help of two members who could have weighed in and provided much-needed clarification. Many members of the public are also unable to attend these Board of Fisheries meeting in person. Therefore, they rely heavily on bending the ear of a board member prior to these meetings. If a fisherman has an issue concerning a proposal in their area, they're going to talk to the board member who is from their area and not call someone 1,000 miles away. I can equate this to your constituents who call you to be their voice and representation in Juneau. If the board member from their region is unable to participate in deliberations, their concerns go unrelayed, thus shutting down one of the avenues of the public process. Participation in deliberations would allow a board member to discuss the proposal, answer questions if asked, ask questions to staff, relay helpful information to those impacted in their region, help build the record, and state their opinion, all while being transparent. Participations in deliberations would not allow them to make amendments, substitute motions, vote on amendments, vote on proposals, or vote on whether a proposal should be brought back for reconsideration. To mute a board member's voice undermines the strength on a board, especially when it comes to offering insight on a fishery in their own backyard. To put things in perspective, ADF&G put out a memo at their Southeast Finfish and Shellfish meeting just this past January stating that Chair John Jensen was recused from 45 proposals for the combined two meetings. The board took up 155 proposals at these two meetings. Chair Jensen, the board member with the most longevity, was conflicted out of one-third of these proposals. With his hands-on experience in Southeast of fisheries, his voice was muted. UFA fully supports House Bill 87, and we recommend the intent language of definition of participating in deliberations be adopted. We thank you for your consideration, and we thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Very good. Thank you for that testimony. Is there any questions? I guess some of the questions I would have for you is that, yeah, you're right. These people were picked because of their expertise, and people from Southeast, for example, would expect that person to speak up on their behalf. But I almost think perhaps they would expect that person to vote. And so where do you stop? You know, you said deliberations are okay, but you can't vote.
That's a very good question. Unfortunately, UFA has just been looking at the bill as written, and we have not discussed that.
Okay.
Do not have opinion on that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any other questions? Oh, Senator Giesel.
Well, only a comment, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the point you brought up. Why not also allow voting as other regulatory boards do? And it's a good point. Just commenting, I appreciate that.
Adding to the complexity of this whole issue, right? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, I think also here, online here in Petersburg. Is there anybody else here in Juneau that wanted to testify that perhaps I overlooked? Okay, seeing none, let's go to Petersburg and Julianne Curry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julianne Curry. I'm just a simple fisherman who was born and raised in Petersburg, and I happen to have been to a couple of Board of Fish meetings in my lifetime. So I wanted to say thank you to Representative Suits for this common sense bill. I always found it absolutely ridiculous that a vetted board member with valuable expertise in Alaska's fisheries has to sit behind the line during deliberations like they're in kindergarten. So I'm really appreciative that this bill is moving forward. Alaska's fisheries are much too complex to be able to restrict the expertise that board members have when it comes to deliberating. And also, whatever you guys end up doing on further defining the immediate family member definition is something that I'm also supportive of. I haven't heard very many people mention that today, but I understand that Representative Stutz's office is looking at further clarifying that, and I also support those definitions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Julia. Okay, let's move on now to Homer and Malcolm Mline, or with the North Pacific
yep.
Fisheries.
Thank you. Can you hear me there?
Yep, sure can, Malcolm. If you would put your name on the record, please, and your affiliation.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Malcolm Milne, and I'm the president of the North Pacific Fisheries Association. NPFA is a commercial fishing industry group based in Homer, Alaska. We have approximately 60 members who participate in state and federal fisheries from southeast to the Western Aleutians. Founded in 1955, NPFA members have participated in the Board of Fisheries process since its inception. We also have many members who are also avid hunters. Our Board of Directors has voted to support the House Bill 87, and we appreciate your consideration. As you are all aware, while Alaska is a vast state, our population is small, and when you narrow things to fishery matters, the circle becomes even smaller. Finding qualified members to serve on the state boards can be challenging, and limiting their participation, as the current rules do, can hamper information. Allowing conflicted board members to deliberate only adds expertise to the matters. In our opinion, keeping the conflict to immediate family members is appropriate, and we appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Okay, thank you, Malcolm. All right, let's move on then to Matt Elward, also in Homer.
Yes, thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Matt Elward from Homer. I'm representing myself today. I support House Bill 87 to amend the conflict of interest rules on the Board of Fisheries and Game. We ask the working people with knowledge and experience in different professions to join the board, giving over a month a year of their time. Then if they have a nephew or grandpa involved in a fishery that has a proposal, they are asked to sit in the audience and not participate. Board members go through an extreme vetting process and I believe have very high integrity and morals. To change the conflict standards to immediate family I feel is both reasonable and responsible. If a board member is conflicted, I agree that they should not have a vote, but to bar them from the conversation is going too far. These are the subject matter experts and they should be allowed to partake in the discussion. In closing, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill that I believe will enrich our board process and bring better regulation oversight to our great state. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Don't see any questions. Appreciate your testimony. All right, I think that is everyone online. Oh. Yep. Okay, good. Okay. Okay, with that, then, if there's no one else here in Juneau or no one else in online, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. So we'll bring the bill before us back to the committee. Again, any questions or comments that committee members like to make? Oh, Senator Giesel, yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just thinking about Matt Allward, who just spoke to us. He brought to mind something else about board members on Board of Game and Board of Fish. They are highly scrutinized during their service on these two boards. I mean, the public, all of whom have interest in this subject and watching these meetings, certainly keep their ethics level very high simply because of all the public scrutiny. So, again, I just want to throw out that I think it's important. I think what Senator Representative Stutz is proposing here is important for us to consider. I am interested in how she would perfect the bill.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Senator Giesel. Yeah, my limited experience with the fish and game issues, I think they are very closely scrutinized and watched, and very emotional issues when you start talking about moose and salmon, that's for sure. Okay, so I think, Representative Stutz, you had some suggested changes you were going to bring to, if you want to join us, that'd be great.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, this is Representative Stutz speaking, and yes, we are going to clarify the language in the bill so there's no misconception as what the intent of this bill is to do, which is to allow board members that are conflicted out to participate in the discussion without obtaining a vote.
Okay, very good. So have we had any discussion with the Board of Game as to these proposed changes that you're recommending?
Through the chair, Senator, to the chair, sorry, Senator Meyer. Christy Tibbles, the executive director of the Board of Game, cannot be here today or be online because she's actually at a Board of Game meeting, and she's the facilitator as the executive director. She did testify previously on this, and they have taken a neutral position. She stated that although it's not as big of an issue for the Board of Game, it is an issue. They do have recusals when people have for instance, Nate Turner is a member of the Board of Game who is a guide himself. So there's a lot of instances in which, or some instances in which he would be recused from a proposal that had to do with big game hunting or something similar like that. So she testified for the board's neutral position. So I hope that answers your question.
Okay, very good. So you recommended some changes, potential changes. Perhaps you could bring those to my office, and we could, you know, look at maybe doing a CS and revisit this with a different bill. Does that sound?
Sounds lovely, Senator.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Representative Stutz. Okay, with that, then, let's set this bill aside and do a little more work on it. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, committee, for hearing our bill once again. Appreciate it.
Okay, let's take a brief at ease. Okay, Senate State Affairs is back. We're now continuing our discussion on conflict of interest. We're dealing now with House Bill 44, Legislative Ethics, Voting, and Conflicts. This bill was introduced by Representative Grin. If you want to join us here, Representative Grin, and looks like you got your trusty staff with you, Ryan. Is it Ryan Johnson? Okay, great. So welcome to Senate State Affairs. We probably won't be able to complete this bill today, but certainly would like you to introduce the bill to us and maybe take some questions from us and see where we go. So with that, Representative Grin, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Jason Grin, District 22, the Sand Lake area of West Anchorage, and I sincerely appreciate the opportunity to present this important piece of legislation before you, especially before an experienced committee, members as yourself. Before I get started, I would like to notify members that Jerry Anderson, the committee administrator for the Legislative Ethics Committee, is online today and is available to answer questions throughout the hearing. And as another side note, I actually need to leave at 5 as well for another committee that I'm chairing. So getting into HB 44, I believe that we all here understand the importance of a citizen legislature. We recognize the importance of having representatives and senators from all walks of life for the betterment of our state. Because of that fact, the standards of ethical conduct for state public officials needs to distinguish between those minor conflicts that are unavoidable in a free society and those conflicts which are substantial and material. The intent of HB 44 is to increase transparency within the legislature and allow the public to see with utmost certainty that conflicts of interest in our Capitol building are taken seriously. The intent of this bill is not to stop a legislator from voting on an issue, as we all are elected officials sent here to represent our constituents. The language in this bill does not directly stop a legislator from voting or ever outright disqualify them. The bill just simply lays out a standard form for which a legislator can decide for themselves if they have a substantial conflict. HB 44 contains provisions to ensure conflicts are substantial before a legislature would be required to ask for an abstention from voting. Any benefit a legislator or a member of the legislator's immediate family might receive from supporting or opposing a particular piece of legislation would have to be greater than the benefit of the general public of Alaska that would receive due to legislation in order to require abstention. The bill recognizes the responsibility of legislators to vote, except in clear cases where the outcome of the vote would result in substantial personal financial gain. This includes cases where an immediate family member or a legislator's employer would receive a large and direct financial benefit. 29 other states have language, such as what we're proposing, that references the potential conflict of interest from an employer. Again, HB 44 creates transparency by creating a clear, concise standard for legislators to use to determine if they have a conflict of interest. I believe that building trust between the legislature and the public should be one of our primary concerns, and HB 44 is an example of the legislature building that trust through increased transparency. And with that, if it pleases the chair, I can have my staff, Ryan Johnston, go through the sectional of the bill.
You know, I don't know if we need to do a sectional, do we, committee members? I think we're good. Thank you for that opening testimony. So let me open this up now to questions from the committee. Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on page 2, line 15, Representative Grin or your aide, whoever would like to answer, you're talking about here, immediately preceding 12-month period, received more than $10,000 of income. Is this referring to actual dollars, or would that include in-kind type of remuneration?
Through the chair, or for the record, my name is Ryan Johnson, staff Representative Grin. Through the chair, Senator Giesel, it is my understanding that from the definition, NAS 24990 for this section, it is the aggregate amount of pay. So it is not in kind. It is simply in real dollars.
So follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead.
So you're talking about pay, and I'm not sure I got that. I mean, $10,000 of income, that could be stock income. From a stock that the permanent fund invested in as well, and so voting on a permanent fund type bill, you know, you've personally benefited. It could be stock. It could be some kind of other income than employment.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I think something that a situation like you're talking about might actually fall under Section G or Section 2, which is G of AS 2460-030 on line 22, talks about interest in a business, investment, real property, lease, or other enterprise. So I think that falls under that situation. And with the PFD vote, that's one that we've looked at. And with the general public language, a PFD vote, in theory, would affect all Alaskans the same way. So, and this is just my understanding and what I've talked with Ledge Legal, that wouldn't be a situation where every legislator would need to declare a conflict because every legislator in the general public of Alaska would be affected in the same way with a PFD vote.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, you know, one of the questions that I always commonly ask, not always, but commonly ask is, what problem are you trying to fix here? I mean, if it's not a problem, right, why are we spending time on this? What is the problem?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, you know, it's a question that we hear often, actually, and you asked that question very, I think, for the right reasons in the last bill we were hearing about. You know, what are we trying to solve and what are we trying to has this come up in the past? Have we seen this, you know, frequently come up? And the answer is no. There's for us, the motivation behind this bill was not caused by a certain instance, not a news story or any example, but you know, when before I was the legislature, you know, you watch through gavel, you watch through Facebook, you try to stay involved with what's going on. And I think from the general public standpoint, I think it's about that trust, that understanding if they aren't involved, if they aren't engaged, if they don't search our financial disclosures or our APOC reports, they might not know what our disclosures are, what our personal business dealings are. And so if we have a way to declare in more public arenas where those conflicts arise through where we might significantly benefit that, if we can do that in our most public way, which it's generally on the floor during session, that is a way that I believe, and what I heard from constituents, as another layer of transparency that because we are in Juneau, far away from our constituents and most of the urban center of the state, it's another way to build that trust, to continually find ways to build that trust. So when we looked at other states and what they do, and focused only on the definition of what we have as conflict compared to other states, it was my belief that we fell short of what a good standard would be. As mentioned, 29 other states have language regarding employers, and if a bill would affect your employer in a beneficial way, that constitute a conflict. We don't have language like that. So this is just, in many ways, kind of getting us up to a better standard of what the definition is.
Go ahead, Senator Giesel.
So this is really a foundational question. Periodically, each one of us stands before our constituents. We live in what is a form of democracy. The word democracy comes from a couple Greek words that mean rule by the voting district. That's what the word democracy means. And we stand before our voting district periodically, different periods of time based on the body that we serve in. And those districts know us, or the voters certainly do, the people that turn out to vote. So I can think of particular people that this bill might target, so to speak, and those particular legislators are well known by their voting district, who rule by selecting that person to represent them because that person has that knowledge that they want of their views carried forward to the legislature. So I just put that out there. I think this is this is a very restrictive criteria for a state like ours, which has a very small population. We represent relatively small areas. It's one thing if we were in New Jersey and we had 300,000 people in a Senate district. That's not the case here. We are well known to our voters who rule in our district. So I just put that out there as a philosophical question. I don't see that this, there's a why for this.
Go ahead.
If I may, through the chair, Senator Giesel, again, I my belief is, as a newly elected official, finding ways that we can add trust and transparency to what we do in Juneau is important to me. You know, you mentioned, you know, how we rule in Alaska in a small population state and a small state with a low number of representatives and senators. Other citizen legislatures around the country. New Mexico, for example, has a citizen legislature. They receive zero pay at their work as elected officials, and they have a standard of a conflict of interest much higher than ours in terms of when they rise to conflict, when they rise to ask to abstain from voting. So obviously different states handle it in different ways of what they see fit is and do with their citizenry and how they represent. And again, for us, my belief was just elected officials, I think, always can improve in terms of our interaction with the public and how they know us. And setting a higher standard is something I strive to do, and I think that this bill helps achieve that. It also, in our language, you know, regarding family and employers, the immediate family is in definition by statute. So if your wife or spouse owned a marijuana business. Well, the voters might not know that, but if this was enacted, you know, if a conflict arose and a huge tax increase on that industry was happening, you can declare a conflict and have your conscience free that your voters know that you're enacting on their behalf and not anyone who directly is impacted by your actions. So I greatly take to heart your perspective, and I agree with very, very much of it. And I think it's something that we always need to be talking about. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Giesel. Yeah, no, I would agree with your comments there, Representative Grant. This is something that we always need to talk about. But I do think the current system we have in place, like you said, you're fairly new.
Very new.
So I checked with Speaker Mike Bradner. That's who was the speaker in the 1970s, and they wrestled with this issue. They you know, people would say I have a conflict, and then they'd vote. The body would vote, and it became very political because they knew where that person was on that particular issue, and they wanted him or her to vote, or maybe not. So I think what they found is that the method that we have now is probably the best and the fairest, because I tend to agree with Senator Giesel that if we make this so restrictive, then nobody's going to run for office. And as you know, having a family, as I did when I first came down here, and having a job as you did, it's hard to get people to come down here. And I certainly know that everybody knows, you know, my financial dealings. We all do the financial disclosures. We normally put on our brochures where we work, if we're working. So I think we do have to be a little careful. The bill before you, they had the threshold for financial conflict. I think it was at 5,000. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, how did you arrive at 10,000? Sure. Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Senator Meyer. I'll defer to my staff, Ryan Johnson, as I think I'm getting asked to move on to my next committee.
Yeah.
I do apologize. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you for your...
For the record, Ryan Johnson, staff representative Jason Grin. Mr. Chair, in AS 2460-990, which is the definition section for AS 2460-030, it actually talks about a person that has a substantial interest in legislative or administrative or political action in the state of Alaska, and that $10,000 threshold comes directly from there. So we wanted to stay consistent with Alaska's existing statute. So I can provide committee members with the actual text, but it comes from AS 246990.
Okay, very good. Senator Giesel.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the document that comes from, hold on, I'm getting to the front page. It comes from, I think it was written by Jerry Anderson, Legislative Research Services. It's dated June 23rd, 2015, and it's on page 4 of the document. It's the third to the last paragraph, which reads, Jerry Anderson, Administrator, Alaska's Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, relates that a close economic association situation, described in AS 2460070, the committee has determined that $250 or more qualifies as substantial. So here we have $250, and then someplace else we have $10,000. It seems like there's a lot of bars being set, and which one do we follow? Perhaps Senator Coghill's comments on this, as I know he serves on legislative ethics.
We won't put him on the spot.
Okay, all right.
Can I abstain from voting?
Okay.
No, you have to vote. But this bill goes to judiciary next.
Yeah, I know.
So take notes. Senator Wilson.
Perhaps Mr. Anderson, I think, is on the phone. That may
yes,
be
he is.
Answer.
He is online. I'm sorry. Mr. Anderson is online if there's some questions. Mr. Anderson?
My name is Anderson. I'm the administrator for the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics.
Okay.
If I think I understand the question is the $250 with regard to the Close Economic Association. Of course, that is not a statutory $250 amount that was part of the legislation, but rather the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics interpreting and administering the act where the $250 was determined by the committee. And that in particular was with regard to a shared calling plan where it was determined that the benefit was more than $250 for each of the people that were legislators and legislative employees who shared a calling plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That has since been clarified where previously it was not clarified what a substantial interest was by statute.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. Any other questions for Mr. Anderson?
I did have another question, Mr. Sure. Chairman, and again, it's on that same legislative research brief, and it's on page 2 of the brief, and it has a list of states with numerical or proportional thresholds. And it says here for Alaska, our current statute, and perhaps the Representative Gren's staff could clarify this, it says has or seeks contracts in excess of $10,000 annually for goods or services with the legislature or with an agency of the state. So it sounds like that's what we have now, and you're wanting to change it to $10,000 worth of income? Could you clarify?
I'm gone now, so I don't need to reintroduce myself. But through the chair to Senator Giesel, so AS 2460-990 is the definition for AS 2460-030, but if you look at 2460-030, which is the section that the bill references, there's actually no monetary value placed in that section for a legislator to determine a conflict of interest, and so that's why we found that amount, and we're trying to create that more concise list for legislators to look at to see if they did have a conflict, because the $10,000 amount fit with not trying to penalize like contractors, anyone that does that kind of contract work with individual clients. If they make $4,000 or $5,000 per contract, building a home, doing a remodel, we didn't want to penalize them for needing to do a conflict of interest, maybe ethics opinion for all of their clients. I mean, if they're working for many different individuals, we just didn't want to penalize them in that way. So the $10,000 threshold fit with that kind of idea as well.
I'm not sure that clarified. I see two completely different things. What we have in 990 Bravo talks about seeking contracts. So if you're a legislator and you are serving in the legislature and you know that one of the agencies is going out for a contract to, let's say, lay carpeting in one of their buildings, and the contract would be for $10,000 or more annually, that would represent a threshold for a conflict of interest. But what is happening in this bill is you're actually broadening that out significantly to be $10,000 worth of income, that's of any kind, in a year. So that's kind of what I'm seeing as the contrast here, and that's what I was trying to get down to. But thanks. I think I understand now. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Thank you, and thank you for bringing that up, Senator Giesel. Okay, so it is 5 o'clock, and I know some folks have other committee meetings to go to or other events. So there's one person online. Okay, he looks like he fell off. So when we bring this bill back up, we will certainly open it up to testimony, because we do want to hear from the public on this. It's a very tough issue, and I think we heard by hearing these three bills, kind of three different opinions on conflict of interest and how complicated it really is. And appreciate you bringing this bill, or the sponsor bringing this bill forward. So with that, we will stand adjourned until. Let's see, Thursday, February 22nd. And so with that, we are adjourned.